Okay, well, we're ready to go. Does anybody, who all needs a book?
The moment we need one, we left ours in our bedroom.
You need two, maybe.
Sure.
Wouldn't hurt, right? Okay. So, I'm sorry?
I don't need, I'm better than I hear audio.
Okay.
I have one.
I thought you were going to say you'd memorized it.
No, my youth.
Okay. Well, so welcome everybody. This is great that we get this chance to work with TSK, work with the vision. I intend to say a little bit about the background of this particular program and how I expect it to unfold and develop. But actually, I'd like to start by just having everybody introduce himself or herself. So why don't I start and we'll go around the room. So most of you know me, but not all of you. Deborah, you're really the brand new one here, right?
Oh, I'm a total virgin, yes.
Okay. And Pamela, you don't maybe know that much about my background. Anyway, so I've been involved with Nyingma. Well, I met Rinpoche in 1973, a long time ago. And in 1977, the first TSK book came out, the TSK. We just call that one TSK. But the subtitle was A New Vision of Reality. And over the last few years, I've really come to appreciate that subtitle. That really is a very good way of describing what the heart of the vision is, it seems to me. So it came out in 77. In 78, there was an intensive program offered. That must have been 79. 79. Intensive in those days meant 5 nights a week. And we had people meeting in Berkeley and also in Arizona. We had a very active group in Arizona at that time. And there were 3 week-long retreats as part of that. So I was in that program. And it was a wonderful program. I never finished reading the first book at that time and during that retreat. I just found it was hard to read that first book, I thought. So I say that to people because I want to encourage you if you encounter some difficulties. On the other hand, and a lot of people will say, especially people who started with the vision at that time, will say, well, that first book, TSK, that's what TSK is about, that's what the vision is, and all the rest of them are commentaries. And in a sense, that's true. Given my own nature, I wind up focusing more on the later books, because not my own nature, my own experience, because I've worked on all the other books. I didn't work on the writing of the first book at all. So in 1980, when that program came to an end, really not long after, I was actually in Arizona. I had moved to Arizona to help or to direct the Nyingma Institute that we had there for a while. I came back up here to Berkeley toward the end of 1980 or in the summer, and started working for Nyingma. Well, I guess I had started by going down to Arizona, working full-time for Nyingma. So I did that and was very involved more on the Buddhist side, and I was teaching at the Institute. And in about 1985, it might even have been a little earlier, Rinpoche started working with me on the second book in the TSK series, which was Love of Knowledge. That was a wonderful opportunity. We worked on it for quite intensively for a couple of years, and it was finally published in 87. And then Knowledge of Time and Space, and I think we may look at a couple of excerpts from Knowledge of Time and Space during this program. That's a wonderful text. Maybe I'll say something about it more if we do work on it. I mean, they're all great. You know, I love them all. And then there was Visions of Knowledge, which is kind of not quite in the TSK series, but it really is. It was written by Rinpoche, and it's about the time-space knowledge vision. But formally, it's in the Perspectives on Time-Space Knowledge series. And Sacred Dimensions. Am I missing one?
Dynamics.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Dynamics, which is a... I can't just say the same thing about all of them. Just talk about how wonderful they are. They're all great books. They all have their own qualities. I believe that in When It Rains, which is that manual of TSK that I wrote, one of the things that it includes there is an attempt to kind of describe each of the books and which book might be most suitable for which readers. In practice, I work a lot with Love of Knowledge and Dynamics of Time and Space. Those are the two that I work with the most. But other people use other books, and whenever I go to another book, I'm always just struck by what great things there are in it. The way that Love of Knowledge comes to figure centrally in this program is that during the last years, we were doing an online program in Time, Space, and Knowledge, and the theme was the self in question. And some of you who have been involved in that program may remember that back in the beginning of the program, I said something about that theme and how we arrived at it quite a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago. We were thinking about ways to make the TSK books accessible to a wider audience. And, because one of the remarkable, and now I mean remarkable in sort of an unhappy sense, I guess, one of the remarkable things about the TSK books is that they're these great treasures, but they have not really found their audience, a wide audience. We from time to time we try to think about what we can do about that, and so one thought that I had was that you could kind of extract a part of Love of Knowledge, recast it a little bit, and create a new book that I proposed be called The Self in Question, and actually design that book, and that's pretty much the basis of the online course that we did. I've gone back to Dharma Publishing lately and said, so how about it? But I do think, people are so interested in themselves that the self in question is a reasonable title and a reasonable theme. And also it's really central to what the vision is about. And that's something I want to look at tonight a little bit. We did this online program on that theme, and the original intention was that at the end of the year, people who had been in the program could come to a week-long retreat here at Ratna Ling to continue to explore those themes. So that's, in theory, what this program is. But in practice, as it turns out, not everybody here has that background. A number of you do, but not everybody does. And that means that we will be approaching it in a more beginningful way. That is to say, I'm not going to assume that people have a lot of background in the specifics of the online program that we did, or because I know that to be the case necessarily in TSK. And that's fine. One of the qualities of the TSK teachings is that they're approachable at every level. The practices are really wonderful in that way. They're accessible the first time you sit down to work with them. So back in 2000, 10 years ago, as one of my fitful efforts to try to make TSK more widely available, I founded the Center for Creative Inquiry, which is really the organization that has sponsored the online programs. And as you know, this is a CCI retreat. And again, that was an attempt to find a kind of a language and a vehicle for making some of these teachings more widely available. In the beginning, when I started to, when I had that idea of developing the Center for Creative Inquiry, I spoke with Rinpoche about it because I didn't want to do it if he didn't approve. And he said, that's okay, you can do that, that's fine, it's sort of a hobby. He said, but don't talk about TSK. So for sort of the first 5 years, we didn't. Nothing about TSK. Which I think, I actually haven't thought about that till this moment, but it was a good idea because it helped kind of shake it up a little bit. You know, it's like, well, what can we can't talk about TSK, you know, but that's the inspiration, then how can we take it in other directions? Whereas if we'd started with the idea of it just being TSK, then it would have just been TSK. Well, maybe that's a reason. In any event, he never exactly said, so now you can start talking about TSK, but it became clear that that was okay, and I started offering these online programs and retreats. And so now TSK is much more front and center in Center for Creative Inquiry, although we do other things as well. So that's how we come to be here. I said a lot more than I actually expected to, but I would have said all this later, so we're okay. So that's my background. So let's keep going around. I guess my question, if you just we'll say whatever you think is appropriate to say, a little bit about, I guess you could say, what brings you here.
Hi, my name is Sudabe. Short, you can call me Sudi. I suppose what brings me here is wanting more freedom. Freedom from the limitations that now I know I have put on myself. So it helps me in my practice. I have private practice in psychotherapy in Menlo Park. So in that way, it really informs the work I do to make sense out of the suffering of not my own, but also others. And I overheard over dinner, Jack, you saying something about this has nothing to do with Buddhism. You know, I totally disagree, and you can laugh at me, disagree with me, but I see this so aligned with Buddhism and the philosophy and the freedom that traditional Buddhism perspective have. It's just another language, and it's more freeing language, I find it. Maybe part of me who's become so westernized can relate to that to such a degree that I'm exploring it also from that angle. That's it, I don't know what else to say. To you, Deborah.
Oh, I'm Deborah. I feel a little bit, I don't know anything, so, but I had the assumption, because I've known a bit about Ratna Ling, and I feel very akin to Buddhism, that the little bit, there were three different ways you could find out about this workshop online. They were all different. And what I got from it is kind of what you said, is that this is it was written to be not from the Buddhist lineage officially, for the Western mind, and well, here I am, but really what I want is more direct access to joy, to what I would say in essence, in these times, if I get caught in my mind and I get caught down those trails of ego, it's not a pretty picture. So I prayed for some help, and then this came into my email box, and here I am.
Well, I've been studying Buddhism pretty intensively for the past 6 years at the institute where Jack teaches, and the TSK was always right there, and I would look at it and think, oh, if I do this, I won't do anything else. You know, I've got all these other classes. And finally, one time Jack said, well, it won't hurt you to just look at the book once in a while. How about this weekend thing, you know, and the rest, well. So, suiting and talking a little bit about what both you and Deborah have said, that I find that I'm different. The way that I experience some related things, although I don't really think they are the same, that I'm just really different in a Buddhist class, studies class, than I am here. And that, and joy comes up very easily here, I find. So for me, maybe it'll be the same for you.
I'm Kathleen, and I work for Jack for the Center for Creative Inquiry, and that's how I was exposed to TSK. I resisted for a long time. but at one point I was helping Jack with his putting the books on CDs for his book. And in doing that, I was you can't help but read some of it. And it started becoming interesting. But what I found is, in a really subtle way, it's I notice differences in how I relate to life, just everything, and it's very, very subtle, but I can, if I look at it, I can trace it directly back to the exposure and the readings and the practice, and I'll go anywhere where Jack is, because he really helps me make sense of it. And if I didn't have Jack, I don't know that I would be as involved in TSK, because he offers insights that I don't think you can get just from reading the book. Mm-hmm. So it's been an amazing experience, and I've been really fortunate to be able to do it and even put the online class together, which always offers all sorts of challenges. But I've actually not met these people face to face ever. It's just been an online course. Mm-hmm. So this is a great experience. I'm really happy everyone's here.
My name is Lois. I'm studying at the Institute in the Path of Liberation, and I feel very inarticulate at the moment. So the only thing I could add to the factual part is, to me, it's not so divided into TSK or Buddhist psychology. It's one giant stream for me, and it works best that way. I don't compartmentalize it, which doesn't mean blur it, but I feel very rich when I'm studying this book or that text, being around people who are mutually caring about the process, which it feels like a very dynamic process. And I second what you said about Jack and, you know, how friendly, user-friendly. With this esoteric, does it feel so strange and strangulating? So thank you.
I'm Dick Close's husband, and I sort of, you know, dabble in and out of different Buddhist things, and actually many years ago we almost tried to get a time space knowledge discussion going with Tom Morse and a few other people, and didn't get off the ground. That was easily 20 years ago. And then somehow the last couple of years is you got a little bit more than Nyingma, and did a short class, I guess, with Tom, and I'm blanking on the other person.
Ken.
And so So I've done a little reading and eavesdropped a little on the online course since Rose was taking it, but I wasn't. And find it fascinating. So interested in learning some more.
My name's Tina, and I initially got interested in TSK because of Bruce. And I was very resistant because I thought it was just another belief system, just, you know, and I had studied Buddhism and I had studied Christianity and Gnosticism and everything, and I was just, I felt trapped by them. I just felt trapped by all of them and limited. And so I started reading their blogs, yours and David's, and they were taking the online class, and I was just kind of catapulted. And Bruce said, I'm a poet, and I've been writing a lot of poetry. And he told me, he said, well, you already kind of have the vision with your poetry anyway. I said, what are you talking about? So I bought the book, and I loved the first. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I was just there. I was home. I was home. And at first, I couldn't afford the classes, and I would kind of eavesdrop through them. And then I started taking the classes, and TSK has helped me so much with limits and conditioning, even more so than Buddhist teachings. And another book that I know is not in the TSK, The Love of Freedom.
Knowledge of Freedom.
Knowledge of Freedom, right. Yeah. That's such an excellent, excellent book, and it's like the foundation of TSK. Mm-hmm. But I can tap into the joy, and I can open up space, and the magic of the real, I love that, and I love the fact, what you said one time, Bruce, there's always sky, and it's become real in my life, it's become real, and I'm like you, I can trace it all back to these teachings. And to me, they're nothing like any kind of belief system or any kind of religion. And they're just so freeing. And so that's what I really love about it.
Yeah, I'm Bruce Alderman. And I picked up the first TSK book, I think, back around 84. And I read it. I said, this sounds interesting, but I couldn't crack it. You know, I think I was also maybe 18 or something at the time. And I think Krishnamurti at that time was starting to sing and speak to me. So I listened to Krishnamurti for a long time. But then I picked it up again in, I think about 95. And I'd been living in Asia for a number of years and studying at different monasteries. And somehow, just what I read there just resonated and shot through me. And I just, it was gorgeous poetry and penetrating insight. And so I just, I've been, you know, studying the book since then. And I attended a few retreats. I moved up to California, and the first place I lived was at T.S. Kayer's house. But I came out here to go to college, actually, finish a master's degree. But I've been here for a while and haven't come to a retreat like this. So I'm very happy to be in a place like this with other people practicing and talking about the vision. I'd like to be here.
My name is Robert Ryers, and I first got involved with Nyingma in Amsterdam a long time ago, way back in the early 90s. And through that, I went there primarily for the Buddhism, but through that got in touch with TSK and kind of fell in love with it because to me, it you know, you can, everybody's sort of talking about the difference between Buddhism and TSK, but to me, TSK just captures the essence of Buddhism. It's about questioning, which is what the Buddha suggested, and it just strips away the ritual and all the words and just sort of focuses on the essence. And that's what I really like about it. And then a few years back, I moved back to Vancouver, so it's a little bit further away. I attended quite a few retreats and courses when I was in Amsterdam, but I was really happy when the online version of TSK came along. I think I've been a pretty faithful student since then. And this is the first opportunity I've had to come and attend, so I'm really looking forward to it. Sort of, the Sunday thing's great, but there's nothing like a retreat, so I'm really looking forward to spending a week.
I'm Pamela, and I actually could not get through the first TSK book. So I was so happy when you said that. but I had a reaction in my body to reading it. And so I was like, there's something here, even if I'm not understanding a thing. Like, I understood the words, but couldn't really get any further with it. And then I got Love of Knowledge, which I found much easier to read. And then, really, I'm here because I just happened to be here. And then this was happening, and it just seemed like too good an opportunity to pass up, just to spend some time doing it. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let me say something about this TSK and Buddhism issue, because it came up at dinner, and then it came up again several times in the course of this. So when Rinpoche wrote the first TSK book, when it came out, he was really, really insistent that it wasn't Buddhism. And I was just studying the vision at that time, so I wasn't involved in the decision making, but the institute where the first TSK programs were held went to great lengths, really, to follow along with that sense that TSK was not Buddhism. So much so that usually, for the most part, the courses on TSK were not held in the meditation room. I remember when Love of Knowledge came out and we did a year-long intensive program, and I was the dean of the institute at that point, we actually held it in the dining room, which, for those of you who know the institute, it's a pretty awkward thing to do, actually. But we did that because we didn't want to do it in the meditation room, because that was our sense of how it should go. There was one year we had a lot of people in that first, well, it wasn't even the first program I was in, it was the program after that. There were a lot of people taking the program. We had to do it in the meditation room because that was the only place that was big enough. But otherwise, for many years, we used a room that is no longer a public room at the Institute, but it was up on the third floor, or I guess the second floor. That physical separation was meant to be symbolic of the fact that this was not Buddhism. So, in recent years, I think you could say TSK kind of has its own footing now, and we haven't really insisted on that as much. But it is still important to think about why Rinpoche has said that.
Yeah.
And people have touched on some of the reasons, it seems to me. One is what you were saying, Tina, and I think other people kind of mentioned it too, is to the extent you say to yourself, well, Buddhism is a belief system, TSK is emphatic about the fact that it's not a belief system. You know? It is not trying to advance some understanding, I don't know how to say that the right way. It's not trying to give you a new theory, certainly, let's put it that way, or a new set of beliefs about reality. And to the extent that people think of Buddhism that way, then, you know, it closes the door to TSK, and that's one element. You could also say, I think Rinpoche was very much trying to develop an approach that would speak to people who would not be interested in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay. you know, the Dalai Lama is a very nice man, but I'm not interested in Buddhism, you know. But so there's the possibility of arriving at certain kinds of insights through TSK when you might never be drawn to the Buddhist teachings to do that. Now there's so many things to say about this. Another thing is just that the whole question of how Buddhism is going to be taken up in the West, what's going to happen to the Dharma in the West, I think it's a completely open question. It's you know, you can look around and say, well, look, you know, there's Buddhist centers everywhere, there's Buddhist magazines, there's well-known Buddhist teachers, Buddhism's doing really well. Maybe so. But I think it's still an unresolved question whether the Western mind is going to be able to make the necessary connection to the heart of the Buddha's teachings. And, you know, it's not as though I'm not a practicing Buddhist. I am. And I'm very interested in existentially interested in the question of how Buddhism makes its way in the West. But it may not work. It really may not work. I think that could turn out to be the case, because I have a little quote that I like a lot about this. This was a Zen teacher who came to this country early in the 20th century, and he said, bringing Buddhism to the West is like holding a lotus to a rock and hoping that it takes root. The West is not very open to some of what Buddhism has to offer, and maybe some of the very fundamental parts. And I don't mean that to sound discouraging. It's just, I think it's an open question. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Maybe TSK will have a role to play in that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible. So the TSK vision is directed specifically at certain aspects of the Western mind. So in Visions of Knowledge, I think it is, has as a subtitle, The Liberation of the Modern Mind. And I think that's a wonderful thought. We have a certain way of understanding, a certain way of engaging the world that is characteristic of our society. And I think TSK speaks to that. It doesn't speak to it in any, you know, really obvious way. That is, it goes back to this question of the fact that TSK is not this, you know, what's his name? It's not Eckhart Tolle, right? It's not, I mean, you know.
I'm so glad.
it's not easy, I think, for most people to see the connection, but I think at a very deep, very profound level, TSK is directed at something fundamental in the Western mind. In somewhat the same way, you know, I think that this has been Rinpoche's mission for the West in a lot of ways. He's developed a lot of different teachings that speak to different aspects of who we are, what our culture is about. So you have Kumye, which is really saying Westerners need to ground more in their own felt experience and explore the depths of that. You have Skillful Means, in which Rinpoche is saying, you know, what is it that Westerners are good at? Oh yeah, they're they're good at working, you know, they're really good at accomplishing things. So let's take that work energy and make the connections between that and the spiritual path. And then you have TSK, which I think is you know, asking the question, well, how does the Western mind work? And how could you speak to what's best in the Western mind? So in that sense, it really is something separate from Buddhism. And then there is the other side, which has to do with the fact that you don't want to turn TSK into kind of an excuse for a certain looseness about Dharma, you know, so that people end up saying, well, I can just skip this part, or, you know, there's this kind of pick and choose mentality people talk about with Buddhism, and Westerners coming to Buddhism, they say, oh, this part's really cool, but I don't think I like that, you know. So, you wouldn't want to make TSK into a vehicle for that, I don't think, Rupsha wouldn't want to. Many years ago, actually, when I first started teaching TSK, more than 25 years ago, I remember that people raised this question a lot, for a very natural reason. You know, we were typically doing workshops and programs at the Nyingma Institute or at some of our overseas centers. And so people were used to taking courses in Buddhism or Kumyai, and so they said, well, what, you know, I don't get it. What's TSK? How does it relate? You know, and is it the same as Buddhism or not? And so I asked Rinpoche that question one time, and he said, you know, I think that's more of a question for the Buddhists. He said, that's not a question for TSK. TSK doesn't care. I don't know if that's helpful for you or not, but it's interesting.
I think it's sort of similar to Dzogchen.
Dzogchen?
Is that how?
That's how you pronounce it, Dzogchen. Yeah, but that's exactly where people. That's where. People have said that. People say it's similar to Dzogchen. Including some of the people who were really in on the ground floor with TSK. You know. But that's exactly what Rinpoche would say. He'd say, this is not Dzogchen. Don't confuse it with Dzogchen. Now, I've never found anything in the Dharma and the Buddhist teachings that is inconsistent with TSK, or anything in TSK, probably more important, that's inconsistent with Buddhism. I've always felt that, you know, there are certain aspects of Buddhist thought that are extremely really profound, and to the extent that I understand anything about them, I think it's based on my study of TSK. Mm-hmm. So I think there is some interplay, and there's no conflict, so we don't need to worry about that. And I will say, since you just come, Sudaba, from a retreat with Chökyen Nyima, I got to know Chökyen Nyima a little bit when I was in Nepal with Rinpoche back in the 1990s. And I remember talking with him one time, and he said, so what is this TSK anyway? And I said, well, we should talk about that. We're happy to talk to you about it. And he said, yeah, we really need to talk about that. And I think that was the last time it ever came up. So... it's not as though, you know, I've heard people say that there are Tibetans, young Tibetans, who read Rinpoche's books in English, like Gesture of Balance and some of those books, because they find them more accessible than the traditional teachings. But I must say, I haven't heard of a TSK study group in Tibet. You know, that hasn't happened yet.
Jack, mm-hmm. I have a question. Do you think that it's the Western mind that we are carrying with us that is trying to compartmentalize them or bring them together in a certain way? When you said there's no conflict, I immediately thought, that takes care of it. Not because you said it, but because that's what I guess I was feeling about the stream. You know, there are rocks and there are trees and there are flowers, and you don't have to, we're fortunate, we don't have to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that's right, that you don't need to say is like, isn't like, you know. You can look for yourself, and if you ever come to a point where you feel, well, you know, I don't understand how to put these two together, then you have to kind of think about it. I do remember an older student of Rinpoche saying one time that it was difficult for them when Rinpoche started presenting these teachings, because they felt that some of the things that they had kind of learned to really cherish deeply in the Buddhist tradition were called into question by TSK. But the fact is, they're called into question by Buddhism too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, because in the end, Buddhism is not a belief system either. And so, you know, I'm going to tell you another story, and then we really have to stop with this. But there's a famous story in the Tibetan tradition about the time of the Mongols, who ruled basically all of northern Asia. They had a huge empire, as you know, Genghis Khan. And his grandson, I think, was Kublai Khan. And the story is that Kublai Khan once gathered together representatives of all the religious traditions that were represented in his empire, and wanted a debate or a discussion among them to really decide, well, who's got it right? And so this is the Buddhist story. So naturally, the story is that in the end, he decided for Buddhism. What he said, though, was very interesting. According to this story, he held up his hand and he said, all the different religions are like the fingers on my hand, he said, but Buddhism is like the palm of the hand. And the thing, when I think about that story, I think about it this way, that Buddhism is also one of the fingers. Right? And so you can get involved in the practice of Buddhism as one of these different religious traditions. But then in the end, Buddhism is very clear about saying that it's just a religious tradition and there's something more fundamental going on. And it's that at the palm level, you know, that the connection between Buddhism and TSK, I think, is the closest or most clear. And the thing about TSK, you might say, is that it's all palm, you know, and no fingers. They have to change your metaphor.
So we're reading palms here.
So. Right. Okay. So I'm torn, and this is often true when I'm leading a TSK program, torn between working with the text and working with some exercises. But we've been talking enough. I think we really need to do an exercise. And let me say that in general, my plan, especially for this retreat, I've just had this in mind ever since I started thinking about this retreat, is to do a lot of practice. But it is so tempting to work with the text. but I think maybe let's do practice. And maybe for most of the evening now we'll do it. We'll see if we have a chance to get into some of the readings. So maybe we won't work with Love of Knowledge tonight. Maybe we will a little bit at the end of the session tonight. So we're going to do a very simple practice. This is exercise 7, I think it is, in the first TSK book. It's called Body, Mind, Thought, Interplay. And maybe I will actually get the book. Assuming it's here. I was going to read it to you, but then I was going to tell you about it, but I won't. I'll rely on the text.
Yeah,
those
lights.
Okay.
Thank you. I can't think of what.
This good, right there. Stop.
Okay.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Okay. So I'm not going to read you the commentary that goes with it. Well, maybe I wrote it so short. Okay. So here are the directions for this exercise. Explore a wide variety of typical activities and situations. Now, what we're going to do here is not, you know, this makes it sound like an exercise that you do during the day, and absolutely, it's a great way to do the practice. But in this case, the situations we're going to be looking at is just whatever comes up for you as you sit here now. And one of the characteristics of any TSK practice, pretty much, there's a little variation, is that whatever comes up in your experience is available to inquiry, is part of the practice. So there are certain kinds of meditation practices in which you say, well, this is my focus, and if something else comes up, it's just a distraction. But in TSK, in most of the practices, whatever comes up is the practice. There is no such thing as a distraction. It's all available for inquiry. So, a wide variety of typical activities and situations. In each situation, notice that its overall character and nature are reflected in your own psychophysical embodiment. Observe, and this is really the heart of the practice now, observe the complex interrelationship between sensations, mind, thoughts, emotions, and body, which constitutes you in that situation. For instance, the mind receives input, it thinks thoughts, these thoughts bear an emotional dimension, emotions are embodied in particular physical areas, such as the stomach or the throat. Such embodiment leads to sensations, which again tie in with particular emotions, memories, thoughts, and so on. Investigate these psychological and physiological interactions in as much detail as you can. So what we want to look at is simply the range of experience that constitutes you in that situation. Maybe it's better to say me in this situation. Doesn't matter what you experience, just take this as an invitation to explore what's happening. Thoughts, sensations, feelings, memories, plans, vague feelings and sensations, everything and anything. And we want to do this long enough so that, you know, your first set of impressions kind of settles down, maybe something else begins to bubble up. So we'll do this for about 20 minutes. Okay, I'm going to stop us there. It's a little earlier than I'd said, but that's because I want us to do something a little different. But first, I want us to expand on what we were just doing. But first, let me just get some reactions from you. That's a very free-form practice, right? So you may not, you say, well, wait a minute, what is it exactly we're doing? Okay, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What's your reaction?
Well, I feel more relaxed.
Yeah, okay, good. Good.
I found there's a difference between being aware of my body, whatever that means, and different stories would start that I would sort of wander a long way from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here, and just there was a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the experience between doing that and getting in some sort of story and then
mm-hmm.
just feeling my body coming to that.
There's a really important difference. It comes up over and over again in TSK, and I've got to say it comes up in meditation too, between the content of a story or a thought, as you were saying, and an experience that has a certain kind of immediacy to it. You know, when you get caught in the content of something, it's like you get lost in it. And the way the mind operates then is really different. So it's good to be aware of that. That's one of the things that you may notice. You know.
The other thing connected a little bit was just interesting. I mean, this is new in terms of doing some meditation, but I was just sort of aware of how I or something that's going on can shift the attention from. So I can notice that and then shift it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or I could sort of go back and say, oh, well, why not explore that a little bit more? So there's an ability to direct
mm-hmm.
attention from.
Mm-hmm.
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 So just noticing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although again, if you get lost in the content, that ability goes.
Right. That's a good point. Like something happens that you say, oh yeah, I can do that, or I don't have to. But when you're in it, you're not. That's not
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think what's so great is you're free to not say, oh, I shouldn't be doing this, or I should think about that, or,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever you're thinking about
mm-hmm.
is what you can experience
mm-hmm.
and open up.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the freedom in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a... Rinpoche has written another book called Milking the Painted Cow, which is more a Buddhist book. But it's got a lot of connections with DSK. I don't think I'm supposed to say that.
There you go.
Right, there, there.
Right,
sweetie. No, there's no right or wrong.
Yeah.
I thought Robert said it very neutrally, that the essence of it without much is there. And it depends on each individual's experience.
Mm-hmm. So I've been leading a meditation class that works with that book, and we were just doing an exercise last week or the week before where Rinpoche says we think that, you know, we have our direct experience and then we come along and interpret it, and that pulls us out of our direct experience. But he said, you know, interpreting something is also an experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, it doesn't help to make this distinction. You know, it's all grist for the mill. That was a title of a book back in the 70s. But it is. It's all grist for the mill. Okay, well, what I want to do now is let's go back and basically do the same practice, but I want to bring in another dimension. Whatever you notice going on in your experience, so it might be a sensation, it might be a thought, it might be a story, a judgment, a feeling, an emotion, whatever it is, try expanding it. And you may not know how to expand it, right? You may not know what that means. How do you expand a memory? You know, expanding a sensation that kind of works, you know, but it doesn't matter. Just be open, you know, your assignment is to expand whatever comes up. Again, without trying to make any distinction or discrimination, you're not trying to go in one particular direction, but whatever comes up, try expanding it. That's it. Do that for a while. So what comes up with that?
Some things are easier to expand than others.
Mm-hmm. Examples?
Well, you know, little aches and pains or itches, I could expand those.
Mm-hmm.
But things that pass quickly, like a sound, I would have to expand the sound. I found that more difficult. So those time-based, time-anchored things for me, difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Joy was really easy for me to expand.
Yeah.
I love it.
What about negative emotions?
Well, when I first did the practice, I couldn't get my mind off what you said about Buddhism not being a belief system. And I kept, that was just going over and over and over in my mind, and I let it play.
Mm-hmm.
I just let it play.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started laughing about it, and it's like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I expanded on joy. So.
Okay. Okay, there's something there, but I mean, it sort of sounds like you had to fit it into your own belief system, right? Whether Buddhism was a belief system or not.
Well, it was like, it really doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, so maybe, I mean, how do you expand a belief? Now, this is kind of theoretical what I'm saying now, but maybe the way you expand a belief is by accepting that it doesn't matter whether the belief is true or not, right?
I guess so.
Okay, you were going to say something, Cecilia?
Well, it's related to what Robert was saying about some things being easier than others, that it's really easy to expand a physical sensation, but
mm-hmm.
that when it comes to thoughts or even getting, if you can wake up within the lostness of the thought, whatever it, when I say expand, it tends then to go to the body rather than to the thought, or to some judgment about the thought that can be made physical.
The judgment can be made physical?
Well, I mean, their judgment tends to, there tends to be a feeling in the body that'll
that's
come
connected
with that,
uh-huh.
and then for some reason, just getting started really. By the time I mean, there's so many different places you could go with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. We're just doing a little preliminary investigation here. The quality or I kind of want to say the reason for expanding, it's not quite right. The significance of doing an expanding operation, you know, that's is partly just that it's a very concrete way of keeping of creating a distance, you could say, between your normal experience. It's a way of not identifying with your normal experience. That's really what I'm trying to say.
A way of what?
Not identifying with your normal experience, right? If you, ordinarily, you know, we have experiences all the time, right? And we just kind of accept them at face value. And because we accept them at face value, we're lost in them. I'm kind of coming back to what came up when Dick was talking about the difference between thoughts and physical sensations, right? We accept something for what it claims to be, you could say. You know? Every moment of experience kind of presents itself to us with a little label that says, this is what I am. And we usually just accept that label. And expanding, it wouldn't have to be expanding, it could be some other operation. Expanding seems to be easy and it goes in a nice direction. I mean, easy, although we may not know how to do it in a particular case, but at least sometimes it's okay, expand. So whatever operation it is we perform on our experience, the very notion that we can perform an operation on our experience changes the possibilities of experiencing. And I think that that's what's involved here. And there's so much of our ordinary way of experiencing is based on the idea of this is what it is, this is what's going on, this is the identity of the situation, or this is my identity as the one who's having the experience. We want to be able to call that into question. So somebody, when we were going around earlier, talked about how questioning is at the heart of Buddhism, and was that you, Robert? Or, yeah, questioning is at the heart of Buddhism and at the heart of TSK. And there's a lot to be said for that. The whole notion of inquiry, of being ready to call into experience, is so important in this vision of reality. And if you say, well, okay, so what is this vision? And how is it different from just another belief system? It's that underlying the vision is this sense that whatever we experience, the claim that always comes along with the experience that this is the way things are can be called into question.
So earlier, when you were saying that you could control directions, and you were saying except when you're lost,
mm-hmm.
you lose that. The idea that then, so when you wake up within that lostness
mm-hmm.
and try to expand that,
mm-hmm.
you know, what
mm-hmm.
what is that? Are you expanding, you know, your concept of lostness, or just the feeling of waking up, or
mm-hmm. yeah, no, that's a great question. You wanted to say something about that,
yeah,
sort of yeah.
That came up for me, and it I get courage to say what I want to say because you gave a disclaimer that that's one way of describing the openness by saying expansion. What I would call it in my experience, although expansion is one way of saying it, check this out, Jaxi, if I'm going astray from the path. To me, is when something comes up, like being lost or a negative or something, is I have a reaction immediately, like in nanoseconds. And then if I'm aware enough by this short meditation that I stay awake, I can catch it and then be very accepting of it, okay?
Mm.
When I accept and let go, and I don't go to my routine of da-da-da-da-da, whatever it is, because usually if it is a negative something, like loss, pain, negative emotion, I have my pattern of quirky something that takes me even darker places or more intense. But with this expansion or slash accepting it, then I go in a different place. As if first of all that negative whatever drops.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wait for something else. It could be positive, it could be negative, and I can stay for 10-15 minutes like he told us. But I wish I could stay all day. I can't. If you did this for 4 or 5 days, maybe I could do a little more.
Well, we do want to do a lot of practice.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah,
you know, I think that what you say about accepting is fine. One of the things about TSK practice, and I include within practice the reading and the discussion and the whole complex that we are now embarking on, engaged in, is that it's got kind of an active quality to it. So, you know, accepting or letting go is a kind of a meditative way into not, as you say, not reacting in the usual way. I think in TSK you say, well, Let's really operate on the usual way. And that's one of the qualities I think is different about this.
Okay, so if I operated my normal pattern, mm-hmm. but in a sense, accepting it, the operation.
Is it kind of an operation, that's true.
So then give me more clues. Like if I was not going to do that operation, what are my other options?
Well, the option we were looking at here just now was expanding. But we're going to be looking at a lot of different options, I think.
Certain things, it's easy to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Robert said sound,
mm-hmm.
okay, sound, I could expand or my reaction, which is if it's negative, oh, I don't like that sound,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I could kind of be more accepting. And that is expansiveness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. The letting go can turn, it can itself be a kind of expansion. And it's also true that, you know, if you say, okay, the sound, you actually said the sound goes by too quickly, you can't really expand it.
Yeah, it was right? hard for me to expand.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. So, it, you know, our experience is a kind of a complex. So what you said is also right. There's the sound and then there's the reaction to the sound.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, those are two separate moments, and oh, I lost that one, I can't expand it, too late. But I can expand my reaction to the sound, maybe. But maybe the complex, you know, is you know, you can expand the complex, the sound and the reaction of the sound and the with everything else that goes along with that. You know? So okay, Lois.
You want to stop? I can wait.
No, I actually. No, you go ahead, and then I actually want to ask Deborah and Pamela because you guys are new to this, and I want to just check in with you and see how this is working for you, but Lois, go ahead.
I can wait.
Okay. Deborah?
Well, I had my experience, and then I have now I'm into wanting to ask a question, but what I experienced starting out was it was amazing. I would say I felt completely expanded because of the quality of the energy of the room, and you know, I could feel the training in the room.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So it's like I got to come in and take a ride.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
It's not this easy at all. So it was quite wonderful. And then things came up, but
mm-hmm.
in my I have a system, and I call it. I've been taught to turn towards an embrace.
Turn towards an embrace.
So,
okay.
So when
many ways, yeah. Good.
So that it was amazing how sensations would just shift and go away to when I did that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then some of the thoughts weren't, you know, I got lost in a few here and there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, what am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just to finish a checking in for a complete newcomer is I'm just getting the idea. I mean, I don't even have a sentence on what the vision is, or you know.
Right.
Can I get a homework assignment?
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I'm getting that it's a form of awareness and meditation, but more precision.
That's fine. That I mean, that formulation, you may change your mind about it in some way, but whatever. You know, whatever is helping you get a way to connect with it right now is absolutely fine. You know, no particular description is the end anyway. Emma?
The first part, I felt a little, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although I had a moment when I felt really sleepy,
mm-hmm.
and it was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
because then I thought, but I wasn't sleepy a moment ago. And so then I had all this inquiry about sleepiness.
Right, right.
Which kept me in it.
Mm-hmm.
And not sort of going into the sleepiness,
but just
sort of looking at sleepiness.
Right.
And then when we did the second part, my first thing was finding the thing to expand.
Mm-hmm.
So I found myself going, and so where is, I had a sense, and mostly it was sensation, so where is that? Like, and now that I found it, and then most of the time I actually didn't find it easy to expand, because what happened was I'd touch it, mm-hmm. somehow, and it disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, okay. And then so I'd move on to something else, or I'd try it with a thought, and then I was just playing with it.
Right.
And I thought, okay, so how do I expand it? So sometimes I made it like pizza dough, and I was pulling it on, you know, and, and so I was just, because I, again, was kind of like, well, I don't know what to do, so I'll just try stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's just exactly the right way to do it. It's not knowing what to do and therefore trying stuff is a good working model. There are many TSK exercises, or at least a number of them, where the instruction in one way or another the Rinpoche gives is, you know, go ahead and do this even if you don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
That not knowing is in itself valuable.
Mm.
It's another way of getting a little distance from our ordinary experience. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm never too happy with the phrasing getting distance from, but what I'm trying to point to when I say that is it's a not getting lost in. Not getting lost in the ordinary, not accepting the ordinary claims. What I don't like about the phrase, you know, getting distance from, is it makes it sound like you take a position over here in relation to that.
Well, how about opening it up?
Right. Well, if you can see, if you take a position, then you're really getting lost in the position that you've taken.
Mm.
You think you're open with respect to this, but don't notice that you closed down with respect to this. So it needs to be, or it's helpful to be open to the experience, you know, to not be lost in the experience without stepping into some other experience which you then get lost into.
Can I mention,
mm-hmm.
there's one sentence,
mm-hmm.
which I think is from Love of Knowledge, but I'm
mm-hmm.
not sure, which struck me and I wrote down and
mm-hmm.
I kind of keep in my mind, which is everything is a manifestation of knowledge. And
could
so
well be, I don't actually recognize it, but yes.
I found that enormously helpful,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm. it is.
Because
mm-hmm.
then
yeah.
I sort of go, oh, what is that? You know, and then there's like questions
mm-hmm.
to ask about that if I don't
mm-hmm.
know what knowledge, if it's not immediately obvious to me what knowledge
right.
there is in that.
Right.
So
good. Okay, well, do you want to ask your question, or we'll just, okay, because it's past 9, so we'll stop for tonight. I'm not quite sure of the schedule. Kathleen, breakfast is 7?
We have 8 o'clock,
8 o'clock. Well,
yeah.
And
you.
It's here. Janet asked me to tell everybody that it will be in here.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
okay.
So,
so then
here.
We should probably move the chairs, or people can do that in the morning, I guess.
Yeah,
okay.
And then breakfast is at 8 to 8:30.
Okay.
And then
clean up, and then we start our session at 9. And we go to lunch with a break.
Right. Lunch is at 12:30, so 9 to 12:30 with a break, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for keeping track of that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it. That's my experience of it. Janet
told us that there
was
a
schedule
there.
Yeah.
Okay. My only question is, I don't quite remember whether we started 9 or 9:30.
She said 9.
Okay. Okay. Oh, and you want a homework assignment? When you are lying in bed tonight, whatever starts to come up, just play with that expanding quality. Right, just go back to the expanding. Now, wait till you're in bed. You're not allowed to do it until
you're in bed. Does everybody know that there's flashlights in your rooms?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's flashlights in your room, which probably isn't going to help you walking back, but I don't know flashlights.